ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as Sean's Sports Talk, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion on the biggest news stories in sports.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. As you just heard from legendary UFC ring announcer, the GOAT himself, Bruce Buffer, it's time for another episode of the one and only Sean Sports Talk podcast. This is episode number 354. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, welcome. It is a pleasure. We got lots to talk about. The NBA season is underway. The baseball playoffs are coming to a close. The Dodgers and Red Sox are both on the brink of elimination in the league championship series, respectively. Football rumors. So with that said, let's get right into it, starting with the NBA. The Russell Westbrook era in Los Angeles has not gotten off to the best of starts, as the Warriors beat the Lakers 121-114 in Tuesday's showdown between Western Conference contenders at Staples Center. Stephen Curry, Jordan Poole, and Nemanja Bjelica spearheaded the winning effort for the visitors, who are looking to bounce back from last season's play-in tournament exit. They got really unlucky. They lost a very close game to the Lakers and then a very close game to the Grizzlies to miss the playoffs just barely. There were impressive showings from LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but that was not enough for the Lakers, who debuted a very new lineup featuring plenty of noteworthy additions. But it's the first game. There's nothing to worry about, in my opinion. Stephen Curry really struggled. He did have 21 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists, his first triple-double since 2016, but he said he played poorly, and, I mean, he shot terribly. He shot 5 of 21 from the floor. Jordan Poole had 20 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds. Bjelica with a double-double, 15 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. LeBron James does what LeBron James does with 34 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. And Anthony Davis, what a game from him as well, with 33 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks, and 2 assists. The Warriors also didn't have Klay Thompson, but their team is more similar this year to the team they had last year. So the Lakers have an entirely new team, and more on the Lakers in a few minutes. But first, we got the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets, a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Finals. Perhaps more so than any other professional sport, the NBA is both memorialized and known for the focus dedicated to what happens outside the game itself. Extracurricular storylines, legacy debates, controversy, memes, hearsay, and transactions, both actual and hypothetical, so often take center stage. It's a reality that both they're both as divisive as they seemingly intend to be.
There's no one that's more center cut when it comes to that kind of stuff than Kyrie Irving. And, you know, he doesn't want to take the vaccine. I've covered that extensively. But more attention was paid to the Bucks and their 127-104 blowout victory over the Brooklyn Nets, as the dominance of reigning Finals MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo and his casual 32 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 blocks, and the performance of what is a deceptively deep bench that the Bucks have. Jordan Nwora had 15 points and 6 rebounds, and Pat Connaughton 20 points, 4 made threes. I mean, if they play like this, I really don't see who's going to stop the Bucks this year. I could definitely see them repeating as NBA champions. In the East, I mean, it's not going to be Brooklyn, especially without Kyrie Irving. I don't know, maybe Philadelphia, but their whole saga with Ben Simmons. Who knows who it's going to be? We got more on the Lakers. Russell Westbrook was very upset after the way his first game as a Laker went. LeBron James offered his support to Russell Westbrook after the 2017 NBA MVP struggled in his debut with the Los Angeles Lakers. Speaking to reporters after the 7-point loss to the Warriors on Tuesday, LeBron shared what he told Westbrook, saying, quote, "I told Russ to go home and watch a comedy, do something that can put a smile on his face. He's so hard on himself. I told him, don't be so hard on yourself. It's one game." Westbrook was the Lakers' marquee offseason acquisition. They sent Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Montrezl Harrell, and the number 22 overall pick in this year's draft to the Washington Wizards to acquire the 9-time All-Star. The first test for Westbrook in his new home did not go the way he would have liked. He scored only 8 points on 4 of 13 shooting with 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 turnovers in 35 minutes. He had the worst plus-minus of any player on either team at minus 23. Tuesday marked the first time Westbrook did not record at least 10 points in a game since January 24th against the San Antonio Spurs. But it's only the first game. It takes time for Westbrook to get acclimated. It takes time for everyone to play together, the chemistry to build up. It really does take a while, so I have no doubt that the Lakers and Russell Westbrook will be more than fine. Switching gears to some college football. Georgia's hot start to the 2021 season is paying dividends for next year's recruiting class. Defensive lineman Mikael Williams told Chad Simmons of On3.com that he flipped his commitment from USC to the Georgia Bulldogs, saying, quote, Georgia has had my attention from the beginning and nothing ever changed, but my love for Georgia is now stronger than ever. Gee, I wonder why that is. Even when I was committed to USC, Georgia never fully left my mind. I loved USC and I liked them a lot, but Georgia was always there. They never went away. My love for Georgia is strong now. Stronger now, I am locked in with Georgia. The native of Columbus, Georgia is a five-star recruit or prospect and the number five defensive lineman in the 2022 class per 24/7 Sports. He committed to USC in June with Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson among many schools that presented him with a scholarship offer, saying, quote, I have a great connection with the whole coaching staff, he told Steve Wiltfong of 24/7 Sports about picking the USC Trojans. Two, the players on the team, they want to be great and want to win and do something big. Three, the fans and the atmosphere, it's electric. Every time I talk about USC on Twitter and Instagram, it just feels great. The strong side defensive end, recorded 69 tackles and 17 sacks in 11 games for Hardaway High School as a junior in 2020. So, I mean, he's a stud, and Georgia, I mean, it's like the rich get richer. Georgia is going to look even better now. Transitioning to some NFL, Thursday Night Football is tonight between the Cleveland Browns and Denver Broncos. And even though the Browns will be without Baker Mayfield and Nick Chubb, they are still favorites. So the Cleveland Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield will miss today's Week 7 game against the Denver Broncos because of a shoulder injury, and he will need offseason surgery. Case Keenum will start in his place. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski announced the news on Wednesday, saying, quote, Case Keenum will be our starter tomorrow night, and we have full confidence in him to lead us and do the things necessary to put us in position to win. Baker fought really hard to play. He's a competitor and obviously wants to be out there, but just couldn't make it on a short week. We know he will continue to do everything in his power to return as quickly as possible. So Baker is now 26 years old. He's been playing through a torn labrum in his left shoulder, an injury that he suffered during the Week 2 win over the Houston Texans. He was briefly forced to leave the team's Week 6 loss to the Arizona Cardinals for evaluation of the non-throwing shoulder after a hit, but later returned. He said, quote, feels like shit after the Cardinals game. Baker opened the year without having missed any games because of injury since entering the Browns starting lineup in Week 3 of his rookie season. The 2018 first overall pick completed over 67% of his throws for almost 1,500 yards with 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions in 6 games so far in 2021. Case Keenum is 33 years old now. He's going to get his first crack at taking over the Cleveland offense. His last start came all the way back in 2019 with the Washington football team. Nick Mullins will likely be called up from the practice squad to fill up the backup role behind Case Keenum. So that's that. I'm still not exactly sure how the Browns are favored to win this game, you know, in Vegas and with the odds when they will be without Baker Mayfield and a couple other players as well. That's just strange to me. But with that, we're switching gears back to the NBA. The New Orleans Pelicans and Jonas Valanciunas agreed to a 2-year, $30.1 million extension on Wednesday, according to ESPN. The veteran center is signed for $14 million this season, and his new contract will go into effect in the 2022-23 season. This is his first year with the Pelicans, who acquired him from the Memphis Grizzlies as part of a 3-team trade. ESPN's Bobby Marks provided context about the financial particulars, tweeting, quote, the 2-year $14.7 million and $15.4 million extension, which is the maximum that New Orleans could offer right now. Valanciunas was traded in the offseason, and the most he could sign for was a total of 3 seasons, including what was left on his contract and a 5% raise. Valanciunas averaged 17 points, 12.5 rebounds, and almost a block a game with Memphis in 2020-21. He also provided some floor spacing, hitting 21 three-pointers and knocking down 37% of his long-range opportunities. The 6 playoff trips he made with the Grizzlies and Toronto Raptors combined should also be beneficial to a franchise looking to make a breakthrough in the New Orleans Pelicans. He's a very solid veteran presence for the Pelicans. By giving him an extension now, the Pelicans avoid a possible bidding war for Valanciunas next offseason. A $15 million annual salary should be a solid value too for them and for him as well. So it just really makes sense. The 29-year-old is getting long-term security. Free agency can be unforgiving, you know, for older big men, so there is no guarantee that he'd get that kind of contract the Pelicans offered him now. Andre Drummond is a 2-time All-Star and 4-time rebounding champion, and he settled for the veteran minimum with the Philadelphia 76ers in August. That should tell you everything you need to know. This may not provide much certainty about Valanciunas' future in New Orleans, though, as they handed Steven Adams a 2-year contract last November after his trade from the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they moved him to the Grizzlies as part of the Valanciunas trade, so you never know. Zion Williamson is eligible to become an unrestricted free agent in 2024, and nothing looms larger for the organization than his commitment beyond that. If the front office has any reservations about Valanciunas' fit in the front court, then they may have to consider yet another center option to pair with Zion Williamson inside. Zion is the franchise, but it seems like they like Jonas Valanciunas. You know, they wouldn't give him an extension if they didn't like him. Switching gears back to the NFL,
Whitney Mercilus didn't have to wait long to find a new home in the NFL. Mercilus is signing with the Green Bay Packers, according to NFL reporter Aaron Wilson and ESPN. The 10-year veteran turned down more money elsewhere to sign with the Green Bay Packers, according to ESPN. The 31-year-old became a free agent after the Houston Texans released him on Tuesday. He had spent his entire career with that organization after being selected in the first round of the 2012 NFL draft. Coming into the season, the Texans restructured his contract to clear salary cap space. He signed a 4-year deal worth $54 million in 2019, but the restructuring included two voidable years that would have made him a free agent after this season. This season marked a significant change for Mercilus in Houston's defense. He spent the bulk of his career playing outside linebacker in a base 3-4 scheme. Texans head coach David Culley hired Lovie Smith as defensive coordinator in March, and his system runs primarily out of a 4-3 base, putting Mercilus at defensive end for 6 games prior to his release. Speaking to reporters last month, Mercilus called it, quote, a little different playing in a new system for the first time since he was in college at Illinois. Now it's like my keys are shortened down to just reading tackles and tight ends and pre-snap reads, so I can't see anything that's post-snap or when motions happen, stuff like that, to get a beat on what might happen, things like that. It's just reading my keys more so and looking in on that and just letting instinct take over. But, I mean, so he's gone with the Texans. Thank God he should thrive with the Packers, honestly. I think this is a huge signing for the Green Bay Packers, to be honest. Transitioning to more football, this could be a blockbuster trade. The Miami Dolphins are reportedly working on a trade for Deshaun Watson and could have a deal with the Houston Texans by this week, per the Houston Chronicle. Mark Berman of Fox 26 also reported a deal could be completed this week, noting the two sides hope to work something out before the November 2nd trade deadline. That's about 2 weeks away. Of note, though, a source downplayed the rumors to ESPN's Marcel Louis-Jacques. As he tweeted, quote, NFL landscape is fluid, but in regard to trades involving the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa, and Deshaun Watson, a source close to the situation texted me, quote, rumors are false. So we don't know what to believe at this point. Who knows what's true? Watson has been inactive through the 2021 season after reportedly requesting a trade in January. The quarterback is also facing 22 civil lawsuits and 10 criminal complaints from women who have accused him of sexual assault or misconduct. The Dolphins have been discussing a potential Watson trade for months, per McClain, but those talks have, quote, intensified into serious negotiations. Miami is now 1-5 on the season after they lost on Sunday in London to the previously winless Jacksonville Jaguars, who were coming into the game on a 20-game losing streak. Miami quarterback Tua Tagovailoa totaled 329 yards in Sunday's loss, but the 2020 number 5 overall pick has missed 3 games this year with a rib injury and has generally failed to impress in limited action. If he had enough attempts to qualify, the left-hander would rank 25th in the league in total QBR per ESPN. That is not very good at all. The Dolphins enter Week 7 ranked 29th in the league in points scored and 30th in total yards. Watson would definitely represent an upgrade for the Dolphins as he finished 12th in that category last season. The 3-time Pro Bowler led the NFL with almost 5,000 passing yards in 2020, adding 33 passing touchdowns with only 7 interceptions. However, because of his allegations, his status remains up in the air. Watson is currently eligible to play right now, but Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk reported in September the NFL could take action regarding the commissioner's exempt list after the quarterback is traded. The NFL's investigation into the allegations against Watson is still ongoing. They probably don't want to rush to any decision before the criminal and civil cases and investigations, trials, and things of that nature are over. Switching gears to some basketball. Back. This is a lot more of a lighter note, a lot more of a lighter note for sure. The NBA continued rolling out the legends making up the 75th anniversary team as the 2021-22 regular season gets underway. Arguably the greatest of all time joined the ranks as Michael Jordan took his place on the list along with former Chicago Bulls teammate Scottie Pippen. Magic Johnson also headlined a contingent of Los Angeles Laker greats. So that includes Paul Arizin, Rick Barry, Larry Bird, Will Chamberlain, Clyde Drexler, Tim Duncan, Patrick Ewing, Walt Frazier, Kevin Garnett, John Havlicek, Allen Iverson, Magic Johnson, Sam Jones, Michael Jordan, Karl Malone, Robert Parrish, Chris Paul, Scottie Pippen, Bill Sherman, Isaiah Thomas, Kate Thurmond, Wes Unseld, Bill Walton, Jerry West, and James Worthy. And there's more. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Wow, Giannis already in there, huh? Nate Archibald, Charles Barkley, Bob Cousy, Dave Cowens, Kevin Durant, Julius Erving, George Gervin, Hal Greer, James Harden, Elvin Hayes, Jerry Lucas, Moses Malone, Kevin McHale, George Mikan, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, Hakeem Olajuwon, Bob Petit, Willis Reed, Oscar Robertson, David Robinson, Bill Russell, and John Stockton. That's the list. Jordan was the most obvious inclusion after winning 6 NBA titles, 5 MVPs, and earning 14 All-Star nods in 15 seasons. The 58-year-old continues to set the standard by which other players are measured.
putting Jordan and Bird, Larry Bird, that is, in the same group was fitting, given how they have perhaps the most memorable individual rivalry in basketball history. Excuse me, Magic Johnson, not Jordan, Magic Johnson. They both entered the league in 1979 and combined to win 8 of the next 9 NBA Finals. Bird and Magic faced off in the finals 3 times in 1984, 1985, and 1987. The NBA celebrated its 50 best players of all time for its 50th anniversary during the 1996-97 season. Allen Iverson, Chris Paul, Kevin Garnett, and Tim Duncan all put together sterling resumes to get on the 75th anniversary team in the years following the last celebration. The league revealed the first 25 members during TNT's coverage of opening night on Tuesday. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, and James Harden took their places among the game's immortals, as did former Dallas Mavericks teammates Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki. Fans can expect the likes of LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, and Shaquille O'Neal to be coming in the last batch. Still, a level of intrigue remains about which modern-day stars made the cut and who didn't. The final reveal will be Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on TNT, ahead of the Mavericks matchup with the Atlanta Hawks. That game will feature two players who may etch their name into the NBA's 100th anniversary team in Luka Doncic and Trae Young. They both have potential to be superstars in this league, but they will obviously not make the 75th anniversary team simply because they are only in their third season, I believe. Third or fourth, I believe. So, yeah, now we got some baseball to talk about. Starting off, let's see, how are we good on time? We're at 16:15. Starting off with some ALCS. I really feel for the Red Sox. I mean, they were up 2-1 in the series. Then in game five, In game four, they were up 2-1 in the series. Then in game four, they were up 2-1 in that game. Altuve hits a game-tying home run in the eighth inning. Later on in the eighth inning, they were one strike away from getting out of the inning. There was nobody on base, two outs. It was a 2-2 count. Pitcher got squeezed, and then Jason Castro, Astros backup catcher, drove in two. And then from there, the floodgates opened up. The Astros ended up winning that game 9-2, and they never looked back in game five. The Houston Astros are now one game away from the World Series after a 9-1 blowout win over the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park in game five. Framber Valdez bounced back mightily. He allowed only one run over eight innings to lift the Astros on Wednesday at Fenway Park, giving them a 3-2 lead in the best of seven American League Championship Series. The game was a pitcher's duel early with a Yordan Alvarez solo home run, the only thing separating Valdez and Boston starter Chris Sale through five innings. Houston finally broke it open in the sixth with some clutch hitting to plate five runs, and that was it. Alvarez finished with three hits and three RBIs with a huge effort for the Houston offense, while Valdez took care of the rest on the mound. Boston ended the shutout on a Rafael Devers home run, but it was not enough to climb out of the massive hole as the team moves to the brink of elimination. So honestly, that one pitch really changed everything. That went from most likely being a 3-1 Boston series lead to Houston evening up the series in heartbreaking fashion and then thumping the Red Sox yesterday to take a 3-2 series lead. So Valdez, eight innings pitched, one earned run, three hits, five strikeouts. Alvarez, 3-for-5 with a home run, three RBIs. Yuli Gurriel continues to impress. He went 3-for-5 with three RBIs himself. Chris Hale with a very solid start, 5.1 innings pitched, two earned runs, three hits, seven strikeouts. Devers went 2-for-3 with a home run. And Kike Hernandez, arguably the hottest hitter in baseball, went 0-for-4 for the Boston Red Sox. So they need him to play well if they want to, you know, if they want to win this series and then ultimately potentially win the World Series. Speaking of the World Series, the Atlanta Braves are one win away from the World Series themselves after choking away a 5-2 eighth inning lead against the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 3 on a Cody Bellinger game tying home run, and then ultimately losing that game 6-5 on a Mookie Betts RBI double. The Atlanta Braves bounced back in a huge way with a 9-2 win over the Dodgers last night. They shook off any potential emotional hangover from Game 3's late-blown lead, beating the Dodgers 9-2 last night behind a huge night from Eddie Rosario, a historic night from Eddie Rosario. The Braves are now only one win away from their first World Series berth since 1999 and hold a commanding 3-1 lead in the series. But don't forget, last year the Braves led the Dodgers 3-1 in the NLCS and the Dodgers won in 7. I'm not saying it's going to happen today or this time again. I'm not saying that. It's the Braves' ace, Max Fried, against the Dodgers' bullpen. It's a bullpen game for the Dodgers. Joe Kelly will get the start. Jumbo Mariachi Joe. So, but if the Dodgers are able to pull the win out today and force a Game 6 in Atlanta, it'll be arrested Max Scherzer for Game 6 and then Walker Buehler for Game 7, potential Game 7. So, honestly, I think today is as much of a must-win for the Braves as it is for the Dodgers. I think the last thing the Braves want to do is keep the Dodgers in, keep the Dodgers alive in the series with Max, you know, facing Max Scherzer next, potentially facing Walker Buehler in Game 7. Even though Scherzer at times has not looked like the Scherzer we all know, and Buehler has not been good. I mean, let's just be honest. Walker Buehler has not pitched well. He just hasn't. But I'm not gonna lie to you. Game 7 of the NLCS, I love Walker fucking Buehler taking the mound. He is the ace of this franchise. He is the ace of the Dodgers rotation. He is that fucking guy, Walker fucking Buehler. He's the ultimate competitor, as is Max Scherzer, as is Julio Urias and Clayton Kershaw. Don't get me wrong, but there is no one else that I would want more in a potential Game 7 than Walker fucking Buehler. And I don't even know why I'm talking about a potential Game 7, to be honest, like that. It's currently 3-1 Braves. The Braves need to win one of the next three to advance to the World Series. The Dodgers need to win three in a row. It did not take long for the Braves to get going yesterday, as a trio of solo shots helped them take a 5-0 early lead by the top of the fifth inning. Adam Duvall also had two RBIs on the night. He flashed some impressive leather to save a run early in the game. The Dodgers made a small push in the bottom of the fifth, getting two runs back on A.J. Pollock's two-run single. He was pinch-hitting, but they would not get any closer, however, with the Braves putting up a four spot in the top of the ninth, which included Eddie Rosario's second home run of the day. What a game for him. He's the first player in MLB in postseason history with two-plus home runs, a triple, and a single in one game. Here's a list of players who had two-plus four-hit games in the same postseason. Albert Pujols with three in 2011, Robin Yount with two in 1982, George Brett with two in 1985, and of course, Eddie Rosario and Kike Hernandez this year. And how about this? The Atlanta Braves absolutely completely overhauled their entire outfield midway through the season. I would say closer to the end of the season. They traded for four outfielders: Adam Duvall, Jock Peterson, Eddie Rosario, and Jorge Soler. Eddie Rosario might be one of the greatest trades of all time with how he's been playing. So out of those four outfielders that they all traded for close to the end of the season, in 101 plate appearances this postseason, they're hitting a combined 341, 400, 593 with six home runs and 21 RBIs in only eight games. That's crazy. But unlike Tuesday, when Cody Bellinger's three-run home run and Mookie Betts' RBI double helped seal the win in the eighth inning for the Dodgers, there was no late magic. So Rosario went 4-for-5 with two home runs, four RBIs, a triple, and three runs scored. Adam Duvall went 1-for-3 with a homer, two RBIs and a run scored. Freddie Freeman, 2-for-4 with two RBIs, one home run, and two runs. A.J. Pollock, 1-for-2 with two RBIs for the Dodgers. Julio Urias did not pitch well. Five innings, five runs allowed, eight hits, two walks, three strikeouts. And Mookie Betts, 0-for-4. That's not going to get it done for the Dodgers if Mookie Betts is going 0-for-4. Let's just face it. That's just not going to get it done. So Game 5 is in about a couple hours. It's currently 3:23 p.m. Pacific time here on Thursday, October 21st, 2021, here in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Game 5 is in a couple hours at 5:08 p.m. Pacific time. Tickets are a lot cheaper now that the Braves won Game 4. But we got some basketball. What a game this was last night. Madison Square Garden was rocking like it was a Game 7. And Julius Randle put together a performance fitting for the moment. He scored 35 points. And Evan Fournier added 32 more as the New York Knicks earned a 138-134 win over the Boston Celtics in a double overtime thriller on Wednesday to kick off their 2021-22 NBA season. The Knicks led by as many as 11 points in the fourth quarter, but the Celtics battled back to send the game to overtime on a Marcus Smart 3 as time expired in regulation. The two teams then battled back and forth over two overtime periods, with the first featuring insane shot making and the second turning into an ugly, sloppy slugfest as the teams ran out of energy and both got tired. Jaylen Brown has scored a game-high 46 points, the most all-time by a Celtic in a season opener, but did not get much help from his co-stars. Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart finished a combined 12 of 44 from the floor. That is awful. Six Knicks players were in double figures, including a 10-point effort from Kemba Walker in his first game against the Celtics since being traded by Boston in the offseason. Jason Tatum was awful. He did have 20 points, but the game went into double overtime. He shot 7 of 30. That is abysmal, with 11 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. Jaylen Brown was a lot better, 46 points, 16 of 30 from the floor. That's higher than 50% from the floor. That is an amazing game from Jaylen Brown. 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and a block. Marcus Smart didn't shoot well either, but he did have 15 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals. RJ Barrett was also huge for the Knicks, 19 points, 6 of 11 from the floor, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 blocks. So the Knicks are looking like those boys are looking pretty good, I have to say. I mean, it's great to see the Knicks, being a half-decent team. Not half-decent, they made the playoffs last year, so
Switching gears to, so we got a couple more NBA stories, some drama to close out this episode of Sean's Sports Stop. The Atlanta Hawks reached the Eastern Conference Finals last season and took the eventual champion Milwaukee Bucks to six games, but All-Star guard Trae Young does not believe the Hawks are getting enough recognition. Quote, "I don't think we get the respect we deserve. I watch a lot of TV. I see people mentioning all of the acquisitions everyone is getting. No one is mentioning us," Young said Thursday per The Athletic. He added, "The Milwaukee Bucks game, the Milwaukee-Brooklyn game, they mentioned how they were in the Eastern Finals. It was just mind-blowing." Young also told Kirshner in a recent interview that he isn't content with how the 2020-21 season ended, and neither are his teammates, saying, quote, "I'm not satisfied. I know my teammates aren't satisfied. We're very happy and humbled to do what we have done and to achieve what we have achieved so far, but that's only making it to the conference finals. That's not the end goal for anybody. For us, we're not satisfied. We want more." Young's comments are similar to what John Collins told the same interviewer in an interview earlier this month. The 24-year-old said he feels the Hawks are, quote, real contenders this season, even in a loaded Eastern Conference. Trae Young was one of the main reasons why the Hawks reached the conference finals in the first place, as he averaged 29 points, 3 rebounds, and 9.5 assists in 16 playoff games. Those numbers are better than what he averaged during the regular season, so he really stepped up for the playoffs. And, yeah, I mean, I agree. The Hawks are kind of getting overlooked, but, you know, it is what it is. They're not a big market team. They're not a team like the Sixers, the Celtics, the Bucks, the Nets. They're just kind of overlooked. The Heat, the Bulls, there's so many teams that, you know, that are bigger than them, so. And now Ben Simmons. I don't know what is going on. I mean, at this point, I don't think I did a podcast since the latest incident where Ben Simmons was at the Philadelphia 76ers practice. The coach, Doc Rivers, wanted him to do a defensive drill. He refused. So Doc told him to drop the ball. Ben Simmons did, and he left, and then got suspended for a game. I mean, I don't know. And so here's the latest. This is as of today. So Philadelphia 76ers star Ben Simmons left the team's practice facility without taking part in his scheduled workout Thursday, according to Woj of ESPN. According to The Athletic, Simmons is, quote, not mentally ready to play and will miss Friday's game against the Brooklyn Nets. It's not known when he will suit up for the 76ers. He probably never will again, let's be honest. Simmons told staff Thursday he was, quote, experiencing back tightness and was briefly treated for it, but the medical staff cleared him to participate in the workout per Woj. As Woj noted, the three-time All-Star is, quote, yet to fully engage in a team practice. Woj added that Simmons is expected to discuss his playing status with the organization on Friday. He tweeted, quote, "All-Star guard Ben Simmons is expected to come early to the 76ers shoot-around on Friday morning to discuss his playing status with organizational leadership sources, tell ESPN. Sixers play the Nets on ESPN, and team is still hopeful that Simmons will participate in shoot-around." So if Woj is saying that Simmons, that the staff is expecting and the organization is expecting Simmons to come early tomorrow, that probably means he's going to be on the first flight to the Bahamas. I mean, knowing Ben Simmons and how stupid this whole saga has been, it's a fucking soap opera. It's ridiculous. Daryl Morey, the GM of the Sixers, said that they will only trade Simmons for a generational type talent. And he said, "You're going to think I'm joking, but this could literally go on for 4 years." So Simmons was suspended for the 76ers season opening win against the New Orleans Pelicans on Wednesday after he was thrown out of practice on Tuesday. The 25-year-old has been seeking a trade since the offseason, telling team officials in August that he would not report. He then changed course in his holdout this month, reporting to the Wells Fargo Center without notifying Philadelphia personnel. The guard has spent the past couple of weeks with the team, but he seemingly isn't willing to take part in practices, which could keep him off the court for games. Quote, "It's a predicament that we're in, and that part is no fun. It really isn't," Doc Rivers told reporters Wednesday. So that's the latest. Ben Simmons, the Sixers. I don't know what the fuck's going on. It doesn't seem like anybody knows what's going on. But I was going to close out the show here. But guess what? I'm not going to do that. I am not going to do that to you guys. I'm not going to do like that. I'm going to give you my week 7 picks. Let me just pull up my computer, get the matchups. Starting with tonight, I'm just going to go money line picks. I'm not going to go at the spread. This is not a betting podcast. I might make a betting podcast if you guys want. You just got to let me know. Just let me know. 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 What's up? That's the Juice WRLD song. Let me just get the games, guys. Pardon the... This is really... I really need to start learning how to edit, you know, so I can avoid this kind of stuff. How are we doing on time? Oh, perfect. We're at 29 minutes. So week 7. Let's go 29:15. All right, let's get right into it. So today at 5:20 p.m. prime time, the 3-3 Denver Broncos at the 3-3 Cleveland Browns. Oh man, this one's tough. I don't really know, because Baker Mayfield is out, Nick Chubb is out. But the Broncos are just, like, not as good as the Browns are. That's the thing. Like, that's the issue. Let me see what the spread is. I think it's, like, I don't even know what it is. Let's see. Oh, come on. I need to get to ESPN because over there you can you can jump to each matchup. I mean, so I'm probably gonna, man, I don't even know. I'm gonna just go. Let's see. Jarvis Landry was activated. It's just like the thing is, the Broncos, they started off 3-0, but they, let's see who they played. They beat the Giants, like, okay. They beat the Jaguars, that doesn't mean shit. And then they beat the Jets, so that doesn't mean shit. They beat three teams that should not be in the NFL to start the season. Then they lost to the Ravens by 2 touchdowns. They lost to the Steelers by a single, you know, by one possession, not bad. And they lost to the Raiders by 10. If my life was on the line, I would go Browns. You know, with, even though they don't have Baker Mayfield, they also don't have Nick Chubb. I'm just going to go Browns. You know, fuck it. Next up, the Washington football team, the 2-4 Washington football team at the 5-1 Green Bay Packers. This is obvious. Green Bay Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers at home are absolutely winning this game. This is not a question by any means. Next up, the 3-3 Carolina Panthers at the 1-5 New York Giants. This is another obvious one. Sam Darnold, Christian McCaffrey, and the Panthers against, you know, a hobbled Daniel Jones, a New York Giants team that doesn't have Kenny Galladay or Saquon Barkley. They got no chance. This one should be pretty obvious as well. The 1-4 New York Jets at the 2-4 New England Patriots. Even though both teams have bad records, the Patriots are still half decent. They still have Bill Belichick there at home. They got Mac Jones, who is significantly better than Zach Wilson thus far through their rookie seasons. Here's probably the easiest pick of the week. The 0-6 Detroit Lions, one of two. Excuse me. They're the only winless team in the NFL as the Jacksonville Jaguars picked up a win in London against the Dolphins on a walk-off field goal. The only winless team in the NFL, the 0-6 Detroit Lions at the 5-1 Los Angeles Rams. It's Matthew Stafford's first game against the Lions and likewise Jared Goff's first game against the Rams. This is, you know, this couldn't be more obvious. The Rams are -15.5 at the spread. That means that they need to win by 16 or more if you bet on them for them to cover that spread. That's how big of a favorite they are. They have zero chance of losing that game. Speaking of zero chances of losing, the 6-0 Arizona Cardinals have zero chance of losing at home against the 1-5 Houston Texans, who don't have Deshaun Watson. DeAndre Hopkins will play. DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt will play against their former teams, the Houston Texans. Here's an interesting one. The 3-2 New Orleans Saints at the 2-4 Seattle Seahawks. Even though the Saints have a better record, the Seahawks are at home. I think Geno Smith, Pete Carroll, and the Seahawks bounce back. I think they take this one. And, you know, after the week, I'm going to keep my picks. I'm going to see how accurate I was. So I'm going with Seahawks over Saints. Next up, here's a good one. Wow, what a game this is. The 3-3 Kansas City Chiefs at the 4-2 Tennessee Titans. I'm tempted to go Chiefs because, you know, it's Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and the Chiefs. But the Titans, man, Derrick Henry is a different beast. His rushing numbers, he's just unbelievable in every sense. His stats, the way he looks, the way he runs. Looks, I mean, like, he's huge. The way he moves, it's just insane. Like, he's just a different animal and the same beast, as Kobe said. The Kansas City Chiefs are just not the same Chiefs that we have gotten used to in the, you know, recent years past. Patrick Mahomes already through six games this season has more interceptions than he had in 2019 and 2020 combined. So he's not playing. I mean, he's not playing bad, but he's not the Mahomes we know. So I'm going to go Titans over the Chiefs on this one. If the Chiefs were at home, I would probably give the edge to the Chiefs, but the Titans are at home. So here's a great game. The 4-2 Cincinnati Bengals at the 5-1 Baltimore Ravens. The Bengals, after being the worst team in the NFL last year, are actually a good team this year. They likely will make the playoffs. But the Ravens with Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, in my opinion, is the current frontrunner for MVP in the NFL. And because they're at home, I'm going to give them the edge. I go with Ravens over Bengals. We got a few more games. We got one, two. We got four more to be exact. A couple bad teams. The 2-3 Atlanta Falcons at the 1-5 Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are at home. They're probably a little better than their 1-5 record indicates. But they did just lose to the, you know, winless Jacksonville Jaguars, who are literally on a fucking 20-game losing streak. So because of that, they're at an all-time low. And I think that continues. I think the Falcons march in and get the win and improve to 3-3. They could potentially make the playoffs. You know, they're only going to be at 3-3. Here's a very solid game. The 2-4 Philadelphia Eagles at the 4-2 Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, it's solid, but the Raiders are just a better team than the Eagles. Even if this game was in Philadelphia, I would go with the Raiders, no question. But it's in Vegas. No doubt in my mind, it's the Raiders. This is a good game, but it's an easy pick. The 3-3 Chicago Bears at the 5-1 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady, the Buccaneers at home, will not lose to the Chicago Bears. That just won't happen. I'm going to go TB for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. And that's what that stands for. And lastly, a decent game. The 2-4 Indianapolis Colts at the 2-3 San Francisco 49ers. This one's tough, but I'm just going to go with the Colts. I just have a feeling the Colts win this one. And we'll see. So, ladies and gentlemen, those are my picks for week 7 of this NFL season. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. This was episode number 354. As always, if you like the show, follow on Spotify, do all that. Follow me on Instagram at Sean Hardo. That's SEANHARDTHO, Sean Hardo. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you guys on the next one. Peace.